We'll resume with the gentleman from Washington, Mr. Inslee, who had a pending question. And the chair wishes to express appreciation to the panel for returning to answer the committee's questions. Jay, did you want to read?
Yeah, I'll just summarize the question. I was asking Mr. McDermott whether or not we should look at this as simply correcting a clerical failure by the federal agency and not be looking at the substantive issues as to whether or not the Duwamish met some or all of the criteria. In other words, would Mr. McDermott encourage us to look at this as simply correcting an agency failure rather than looking at the underlying substance of it?
My view is that you should not do it on the basis of a clerical error. I think the recognition should be granted on the basis of a thorough analysis, which was done by the BIA and affirmed by the acting secretary. and I talked about the clerical error not as something you should reverse, but rather that you should understand that's what was used as a means to ignore the BIA's recognition or process that they went through with this tribe and what the acting secretary did. There was no other way that the Bush administration could reverse this except by using this clerical error. And that's, I think, that you should go back to look at, does this tribe exist? And if it exists, then it should be granted recognition. That's the simple question, a simple answer.
Would the gentleman yield?
Yes.
I just want to, if I could, I appreciate the gentleman yielding, kind of weigh on this. As Mr. Kildee has pointed out many times, it's the responsibility of the Congress to recognize tribes as a constitutional right. I hope I'm not paraphrasing, but he has said that over and over, and I certainly agree with him. The problem we've been working under is that responsibility over time has been ceded to BIA, and they came up with seven criteria. Now, you can argue whether that criteria is good enough or not, but it's been accepted pretty much that's how we will proceed. And the fact of all three of these tribes, or all four of the tribes, not one of them was in agreement with all of the criteria. Now, I'm not going to draw a judgment whether they're right or wrong, and I'm not going to suggest that at the end of the Clinton administration that individual was in error of making the recognition. But as I mentioned in my opening statement, we do not have a criteria by which to judge these. I think rights need to be or wrongs need to be righted over time. I fully support that. But unless we come up with some sort of a something we can agree on, like the seven criteria within BIA, as an example, we're going to be having these discussions over and over. And I thank the gentleman for yielding because the issues, I have issues in my district, not on recognition, but certainly with BIA. And so I'm not going to hold them whole on all of this, but that's the quandary we're in. I think I appreciate the gentleman for yielding.
Mr. Chair, would you let me another question? I know we're over time. This is an important issue I think we should address. Let me just ask all my colleagues at the panel, how would you ask us, what criteria should we use in these decisions? In other words, should we follow the regulatory structure that the BIW has used? Should we use independent congressional judgment about the justice of these independent proposals? Should we fashion some new criteria here that applies to all four proposals? You know, upon what criteria should we make this decision?
Well, in the Burt Lake case, I find it, I've only been doing this for 17 years for them, but I'm sure the tribe is more frustrated than I am. You acknowledge that they signed the 1836 treaty. There's nothing about seven criteria when you sign the treaty in 1836. They ceded lands again in 1855. The white men burned or down their village, kick them off their land. The federal government goes to court on their behalf and says, we're here because we have care, control, and guardianship of this tribe. But then now we deny them their basic government-to-government criteria based on some seven criteria or some new factors. Look at the facts, especially in the Burt Lake Band. We're not looking for recognition. We're looking for a reaffirmation. We cannot be a moving target in this. And this tribe has done everything asked of them. Even when Interior denied them again, they said, oh, but it may be meritorious if the Congress would act. We need someone to step up to the plate and actually reaffirm for this tribe. No one denies, even Interior says, they signed those treaties. They went to court on their behalf. Then how can they say, oh, we have new criteria on recognition? That flies in the face of everything we stand for as a country and as a nation. Recognize them government to government. We don't need new criteria. We don't need new facts. Look at these cases and listen to the testimony of all of my other three colleagues. And it seems like every one of them are recognized at one time by the federal government. But now because of other forces, we want new criteria, new ideas. Let's stand, you know, they signed this treaty. Let's give them the rights that were granted to them. They were never taken away.
If I could add only this to that. If we go over the whole history of relationships between Native Americans and the federal government, it is clear that we have changed our criteria from year to year to year to year. And for us to be hung up on seven criteria that were set up after they'd been kicked from the courts into the BIA, let the BIA make the decision. And the BIA then sits down and writes seven white man criteria about whether a tribe exists. And then you find they don't meet one. Well, there's certainly a lot of other circumstantial evidence around the issue that makes it clear enough for an acting assistant secretary to go through the whole case and say, this is a tribe. And I think that for us then to second guess, well, there's no from that number two, they don't have anything in number two, therefore they don't get it. The assistant secretary was wrong. We could be doing this in 2055 if we want, by continuing to shift the criteria and the ground on which we make a decision. I think the Duwamish are entitled to a final decision. And I think they had one, and it was taken out of their hands. So, and if they'd had money, they could have gone to a judge and demanded a writ of mandamus and had this filed in the Federal Register, and they would be a tribe today. They didn't have money. So, I mean, what we're saying to the tribes is, well, you got to get your money and go to court and force this thing because the Congress can't. It's useless, and it's demeaning for the United States to treat our own native people in this way. I think that's the real issue here, is that we demean ourselves by treating them that way because it means our word is no good. And that's why I think this should be over.
I didn't have the opportunity to hear the whole question, but I think I got the gist of what you were suggesting. And Mr. Chairman, in his opening statement, alluded to a piece of legislation that Mr. Feliu-Mavega is bringing forward. I look forward to seeing that. My frustration is coming from both the perspective as Lieutenant Governor in the executive branch, when I couldn't get the people that worked for us in the agencies to make a decision based upon the law, the regulation, the criteria that was established by the Montana legislature. There was that frustration. And then there was a follow-up frustration when the legislature felt that the executive branch wasn't doing enough, and so they just piled more regulations and changes on us. Now, ultimately, it comes down, I think, to the Department of Interior making the right decision and actually making the decision. It's not that difficult based upon the criteria that have been established. Now, if we feel that one tribe or another is not being recognized unfairly, then we can at that time change the rules or the criteria. But I would suggest that there are the pieces and parts in place now for them to make the right decision. They ought to do their job, and that is make the right decision.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I would just answer that with one word, and that's justice. And each tribe is going to have a somewhat different specific history. But there are certain commonalities, and one of those commonalities is that an entity imposed what was at the time, I think, a grave injustice on the tribes, created certain conditions which they then subsequently used, the conditions they created, to say, well, we're now not going to recognize you or restore you because of the conditions we imposed upon you to begin with. So you get this catch-22 that gets created, and the problem there is that if you live in these areas, as I do and I think all of my colleagues do, there's no doubt on any objective person on the Pacific Coast that I know of in the mouth of the Columbia that the Chinook people are there, always have been there, have a legitimate recognized government. The people out there, if you ask them these criteria,
unless they've got a very serious conflicting self-interest and they're acting in self-interest, not in the interest of justice, I don't think there's any doubt. And that's the problem. And Ms. McDermott's point about this could be delayed forever. Justice delayed is justice denied. And some of my colleagues and constituents behind me here have ancestors, grandparents who have waited their entire life for this day, and they sense a profound sense of obligation and urgency to try to at last achieve justice in the lifetime of their ancestors. None of us four individuals here are members of these tribes. In some cases, it's a politically difficult thing to do to seek restoration or recognition, but we do it for the sole reason that we seek justice. And that would be my criteria.
Well, just a comment. I think that's a pretty good criteria. I think I sit in kind of a unique place. I sort of feel I'm a member of all these tribes because I represent some on both sides of this issue about the recognition, particularly of the Duwamish. I've got heritage from the Cayuse Nation who were moved from Whitman County, Washington, down to the reservation in Oregon as part of that and subsumed in another tribal situation. So I have some kind of flavor for the ancestral part of this issue. And I want to thank you four gentlemen for pushing what these issues you conceive as justice. Thank you very much.
General Lady from Virgin Islands, Dr. Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to welcome our colleagues. I'm coming in late and not having heard or had a chance to go through the testimony. I just want to associate myself with many of the remarks that were made by my colleague, for example, Ms. Napolitano and Mr. Grijalva, as well as what Congresswoman McDermott and all of the others have said. I think it's really a travesty that this late in the history of our country that American Indians are still having to come to Congress to seek recognition and to be willing, have to offer to give up what rights and privileges other tribes have just to have us recognize their existence. So I'm looking forward to working with my colleagues, with you, Mr. Chairman, on resolving this issue and simplifying the process and making sure that all of our original Americans get the recognition that they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other, Mr. Kelly?
Just one statement. I'm glad that the Constitution was mentioned and the treaties. You know, we have to go back to that period. A lot of treaties were made affecting lands in Michigan, including the Treaty of Ghent, which ended the War of 1812. And there were battles fought in Michigan during the War of 1812. The United States then was trying to wrap things up. It signed the Treaty of Ghent, which took the British out of Michigan because they had hung around there despite the fact they should have left at the end of the Revolutionary War. They hung around in Michigan. The Treaty of Ghent, and then they signed the treaties with the 1836 treaty, which Mr. Stupak mentioned, and the 1855 treaty, which I've read from beginning to end. Those treaties are the supreme law of the land. And John Marshall declares that a treaty signed with an Indian tribe has the same status with a treaty signed with a foreign nation. And under the Constitution, they are the supreme law of the land. So if you want to undo the Treaty of 1836, the Treaty of 1855, the Brits may come in here and say, let's undo the Treaty of Ghent. The same strength, the same validity of those two treaties. And I think we, as a Congress, have an obligation to uphold the supreme law of the land, which this declares all treaties to be. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen from Michigan. Before excusing the panel, just a sidebar to the gentleman from Michigan, Mr. Stupak. I know your committee held a hearing last week on bottled water, hearing of which you chair, and the general lady from Virgin Islands serves on that subcommittee. But I just want to assure you that the water that you've been drinking before this subcommittee is free of any contaminants and is pure because it's from Peter's Mountain in southern West Virginia, in my district.
Mr. Chairman, I took note of that. I also note that it is natural spring water. Therefore, that is a designation in and of itself of different purification steps it had to go through to be designated as spring water. But
thank you.
Since it's from since it's from West Virginia, we know it's good water.
Once again, the chair will say to our colleagues, you are free to join the panel and participate in questioning the witnesses later today and introducing them if you so wish. Thank you very much for your very compelling testimony, each of you.